all with dark hair and pale skin. I'll send a photo to your mobiles when we get back. I have a couple good shots of him in my notes. He steals powers and keeps them. All he has to do is touch someone, and he can take their powers. One of the reasons he's so dangerous is that it's impossible to tell what abilities he has, as he has likely never manifested them all. Prime invincibilities include danger sense, impervious skin, regeneration, and now the ability to project his consciousness and powers into a fake body. Cody let out a long, soft whistle.
That's quite the list.
He can also fly, transform objects to salt, manipulate heat and cold, conjure objects at will, and put people to sleep with a touch, I added. By all accounts, he's also incredibly lazy. He could be the most dangerous epic alive, but he doesn't seem to care. He stays here, rules Eldithia, and doesn't bother others unless he has to.
His weakness? Megan said.
I've got no idea, I replied as we reached the edge of town. Everything I know about him is limited to a few widely accepted, but far too general reports. He's lazy, which we can probably use. He also is reportedly slow to steal new powers. He finds it easier to let epics who serve him keep their abilities, since they can do the hard work for him. It's said he hasn't taken a new power in years, which was why I was surprised to find he'd absorbed Dead Drop's abilities. Abraham grunted.
I'd still rather have an idea of his weakness.
Agreed, I said. We should do some intel gathering, today if possible. I'd rather not fight Larsener if we can avoid it, but I'd like to have a plan anyway. We walked on, passing buildings that were still growing stumps. They kind of looked like teeth. Giant, lumpy teeth. Beyond those, people worked the fields. Conflicts between epics in the city didn't change the workers' routine. Harvest the grain, give it to whoever ended up in charge, avoid starving. The others gave me confused looks as I settled in here to wait, checking my mobile. You sure it's today? I typed.
The delivery?
Nighthawk asked.
That's what the mobiles said. I don't know why they'd lie.
Sure enough, a caravan of trucks soon approached, laden with goods ordered from UTC's trading network. I wasn't certain if Terms herself would be in attendance, and though it pained me, since I wanted to see her powers work, I knew I probably shouldn't try to catch a glimpse. I did, however, spot the same overseer from a few days ago, when we'd first entered. All right, I said to the team. I figure this is as good a place as any to get some information. We need intel on Larsener if we're going to have any shot at guessing his weakness. Go do what it is you do best.
Make stuff up? Cody asked, rubbing his chin.
So you admit it,
Mizzy said, pointing at him.
Of course I admit it, lass. I have 7 PhDs. That kind of time spent learning makes a fellow very self-aware.
He hesitated.
Of course, all 7 are in Scottish literature and culture from different schools. The lad's got to be thorough in his approach to his expertise, you see.
I shook my head, approaching the overseer. We wore different faces now, but the man didn't care. He put us to work as easily as he had before, hauling crates from the UTC shipment. The team spread out, engaging the other workers, listening to gossip. I managed to get myself assigned to unloading crates from one of the trucks.
This is a good place for intel,
Abraham said to me softly as he stepped up to get a crate.
But I can't help thinking you have an ulterior motive, David. What are you up to?
I smiled, slid the broken mobile from my pocket, and wrapped it in a dark cloth. I picked a specific crate, then wedged the slim mobile between the slats in the wood near one of the corners. As I'd hoped, it was practically invisible in there. I handed the crate to Abraham and winked. Put this with the others. He raised an eyebrow toward me, then peeked into the crate. He grinned immediately, then obeyed. The rest of the afternoon was consumed by work, with us carrying boxes and chatting up the other workers. I didn't learn much, as I was distracted by my plans, but I passed Abraham and Cody engaged in several relaxed conversations with other workers. Mizzy seemed to have the most talent for it. It would have been nice to have XL along. That man had been wide as a boat and as morbid as a, sinking boat. But he'd been good with people, and good with information. Thinking about him made me sick. I had convinced myself Prof couldn't be blamed, but Sparks. I'd really liked XO. I forced myself to chat up one of the other workers. The older man had an accent that reminded me of my grandmother's. As we walked to the warehouse, a different one this time than last, he seemed to know the city well. He didn't know much about Larsener, though he did complain that the epic didn't rule strongly enough.
"In the old country," the man explained, "it have made short work of a fellow like Larsener. He lets all the epics in town run about. He's like a grandfather without any sense to discipline his grandkids. A stronger hand, that's what's needed here. Police, rules, curfews. People complain about that kind of thing, but it's where we get order, society."
We passed Cody, who was sharing a cigarette with another worker. Cody appeared to be loafing, but if you watched him, you could see that he was carefully minding the locations of the other reckoners. If you needed to know where someone was, Cody was the person you asked. I found myself comfortably entering conversations with several other workers. I realized after some time that I was actually more at ease here than I'd been in Babylar, where the people were more open, the society less oppressive. I didn't like what was being done to Ildithia. I didn't like how scared the people were, how divided and brutal life here was proving to be. But I was accustomed to it. Eventually, we accepted our grain rations and made our way to the hideout, sharing intel. Nobody knew Larsener's weakness, though we hadn't expected that it would simply be open knowledge. The problem was, nobody seemed to have seen Larsener either. He kept to himself, and there were a shockingly small number of rumors, mostly about epics whose powers he'd stolen, leaving them as common people. I listened to it all with a growing sense of disappointment. It was evening by the time we arrived home, and Mizzy used her mobile to double-check the security sensors on the door. We piled into our narrow pencil box of a hideout and split our separate ways. Cody asked Abraham for the Urtich, which he wanted to practice with. I still hadn't been able to get it to do much. Maybe he'd have more luck. Megan retreated to her room. Abraham went to tinker with some of the weapons, and Mizzy went to make a sandwich. I settled down on the ground in the main room on the bottom floor, my back against the wall. The only light was from my mobile, which eventually dimmed. I'd always chided Prof for taking things too slowly, for being too careful. Yet here I was in Ildithia, and my entire planning meeting had amounted to, "Yep, we sure do need to stop Prof and find Larsener's weakness. Anyone got any ideas?" "Nope." "Oh well, good job anyway." Looking back, dealing with Steelheart seemed easy in comparison. I'd had 10 years to prepare for that. I'd had Prof and Tia to work out the details of the plan. What was I doing here? A shadow fell on the steps and Megan appeared, lit from the kitchen above. "Hey," she said. "David, why are you sitting in the dark?" "Just thinking," I said. She continued down, eventually taking a seat on the ground beside me, lighting her mobile and setting it in front of us for illumination. "We've packed about 40 different guns into the city," she muttered, "but not a one of us thought to bring a sparking cushion." "You surprised?" I asked. "Not in the least. Good job today." "Good job," I said. "We didn't come up with anything." "Nothing is ever decided at the early meetings, David. You got everyone pointed in the right direction, got them thinking. That's important." I shrugged. "Nice work with the hidden mobile, too," she noted. "You saw that?" "Had me confused until I checked in the box. You think it will work?" "Worth a try," I said. "I mean, if..." I trailed off as an indicator light hanging on the wall blinked softly. That meant someone had walked into the entryway of the apartment building beside us. Our fake door led into that entrance, and was one of our security threats.
Cody had hidden it by covering some old boards, taken from cargo crates he'd scrounged up, with a thin layer of salt on one side and a black cloth backing. From the outside, it looked like any other section of the wall, but you could push it in and slide it open to make a doorway. He warned that if someone was in the entryway, they might be able to hear something coming from the false section, hence the light, and the instructions for everyone on the ground floor to be quiet if someone was outside the door. Megan draped her arm around me, yawning, as we waited for the people to move on. We needed a pressure plate out there to let us know when they were gone, or maybe a camera or something. Our phones flashed, and the hidden door rattled. I blinked, then scrambled to my feet, following Megan, who had moved a hair faster than me. Both of us had handguns out a second later, leveled at the door, while Abraham cursed in the room nearby. He charged out a moment later with his minigun at the ready. The door wobbled, scraped, then slipped to the side.
"Hmm,"
a voice said outside. I imagined Prof bursting through, having traced us. Suddenly all of our preparations seemed simplistic and meaningless. I had led the team to its destruction. The door opened all the way, revealing a backlit figure. It wasn't Prof, but a younger man, tall and lanky, with pale skin and short black hair. He looked us over, not a glimmer of concern in his eyes, despite facing three armed people. "That door isn't going to do at all," the man said. "Far too easy to get through. I thought you people would be capable."
"Who are you?"
Abraham demanded, eyeing me, waiting to see if I gave the order to fire. I didn't, though I knew this man. I had several pictures of him in my files. Larsener, Emperor of Atlanta, had come to pay us a visit.
19.
"I'll put those things down," Larsener said, stepping into the hideout and pushing the door closed. "Bullets can't hurt me. You only draw attention." Unfortunately, he was right. This man was invulnerable in multiple ways. Our guns might as well have been wet noodles. None of us lowered our weapons.
"What's going on?" I demanded. "Why are you here?"
"Haven't you been paying attention?" Larsener had an unexpectedly nasal voice. "Your friend wants to kill me? He's been tearing the whole city apart looking for me. My servants are useless. My epic's too cowardly. They'll switch sides on me in an eye blink."
He walked forward, making all three of us jump, and kept right on talking.
"I figured you'd know how to hide from him if anyone does. This place looks horridly uncomfortable. Not a cushion in sight. And it smells like wet socks."
He shivered visibly, then poked into Abraham's workroom. We crowded around the doorway, as inside, he spun and flopped backward. A large stuffed chair materialized out of nowhere, catching him. He lounged there.
"Someone get me something to drink. And try not to make too much noise. I'm tired. You have no idea how nerve-wracking it is to be hunted like a common rat."
The three of us lowered our weapons, baffled by the slender epic, who had started muttering under his breath as he lay, eyes closed, on his new easy chair. I finally ventured.
"And if we don't obey you?"
Abraham and Megan looked at me as if I were crazy, but it seemed a valid question to me. Larsener cracked open an eye.
"Huh?
What are you going to do?" I said. "If we don't obey you."
"You have to obey me. I'm an epic."
"You do realize," I said slowly, "that we're the Reckoners."
"Yes."
"So we kind of disobey epics all the time. I mean, if we listened to what epics said, we'd be pretty bad at our job."
"Oh?"
Larsener said.
"And didn't you spend your entire career doing exactly what an epic told you?"
Sparks, did everyone know about that? I supposed it wasn't too tough to guess, now that he'd moved into town. Still, I opened my mouth to object further, but Megan pulled me from the room by my arm, Abraham retreating with us, awkwardly hefting his gun. Cody and Mizzy were on the steps leading down, looking concerned. We ended up in the middle-floor kitchen, arranged around a narrow saltstone table, speaking in hushed tones.
"Is that really him?"
Mizzy asked.
"Like, the big dude? The king of the city? Was his name Magoo?"
"He materialized a chair," I said. "That's a very rare power. It's him."
"Sparks!"
Mizzy said.
"You want to sneak out and blow the place? I got the explosives already."
"Wouldn't harm him," Megan said, "unless we can engage his weakness." "Beyond that, this might be his decoy," I said. "Though I'm not sure how likely it is. Larsener's real body could be somewhere else. He would be basically unconscious in a kind of trance. Breathing, heart beating, but not truly awake." "Seems a dangerous gamble," Megan said. "Considering how scared he's acting, would he want to leave his real self unprotected like that?" "Who knows?" I said.
"I wonder either way," Abraham said. "Why is he here? His claim of seeking refuge is a front, is it not? He is a most powerful epic. He wouldn't need to..."
Footsteps in the stairwell. We all turned as Larsener climbed up to the second floor.
"Where is my drink?" he demanded. "You seriously couldn't remember even one simple order? I can already see that my assumption of your limited capacities was a gross overestimation."
The team held weapons in nervous grips, subtly turning to form a unified front against the creature. A high epic, prowling through our base unrestrained. We were specks of mud on the window. He was a giant, vengeful bottle of spray cleaner. Extra strength, lemon scent. I carefully stood from my seat. The others had all been reckoners long before me, trained by Prof to be careful, quiet. They'd want to bolt. They'd want to distract Larsener, then flee and set up a different base. I saw an opportunity instead. "You want to work together?" I said to Larsener. "Since we have a common enemy, I'm willing to hear your offer." Larsener sniffed.
"I just want to avoid being murdered. The whole city is turning against me. The whole city. Me, the one who protected them, gave them food and shelter in this miserable world. Humans are thankless creatures."
Megan stiffened at that. No, she did not like the philosophy that considered humans and epics to be different species. "Larsener," I said, "my team is not going to become your servants. I'll let you stay with us on certain conditions, but we are doing you a favor." I could practically hear the breath catch in the throats of the others. Making demands of a high epic was a sure way to get yourself exploded. But he hadn't hurt us so far, and sometimes this was the only option. Either you juggled the fire, or you let it burn everything down.
"He's made you insolent, I see," Larsener said. "Gave you too much freedom, let you participate. If you bring him down, it will be his own fault."
I stood my ground. Finally, Larsener's knees bent, a stool with a plush top forming for him to settle upon. He slumped.
"I could kill you all."
"You could try, kiddo," Megan muttered. I stepped forward, and Larsener looked up at me with a sharp glance, then cringed. I'd never seen this behavior from an epic of his stature. Most of them stood defiant even in the middle of a trap, confident they'd be able to escape it. The only thing that ever seemed to make them uncomfortable was the moment when their weakness exposed them. I stooped to meet Larsener's eyes. He looked like nothing so much as a frightened child, despite being a few years older than me. He wrapped his arms around himself and turned aside.
"I suppose I have no choice," he said. "He'll destroy me otherwise. What are your conditions?"
I blinked. Honestly, I hadn't gotten that far. I looked toward the others, who shrugged.
"No killing any of us?" Mizzy said. "What about the one in the stupid clothing?"
Larsener asked, pointing at Cody, in his camo gear and old sports team t-shirt. "Not even him," I said. Mizzy was probably right to spell it out. Epics could have strange ideas about social mores. "First rule is that you don't hurt us or anyone else we bring here. You stay in the base and don't use your powers to make our lives difficult."
"Fine," Larsner snapped, wrapping his arms around himself tighter. "But when you're done, I get my city back, right?"
"We'll talk about that later," I said. "For now, I want to know how you found us. If Prof can repeat what you did, then we'll need to pull out immediately."
"Bah, you're fine. I can smell epics. He can't."
"Smell them?" I asked.
"Sure, like food being cooked, all right? He lets me find epics to, you know,
steal their powers." So he was a dowser as well as everything else. I shared a look with Megan, who seemed troubled. We hadn't considered that someone might find us by tracking her powers. Fortunately, dowsing was a very rare ability, though it certainly made sense as part of Larsner's original portfolio. "Dowsers," I said, turning back to him. "Are there any others in the city?"
"No, though that monster who led you has some disc-shaped devices that can do it."
We were safe then. Those discs were like the one we'd had in New Cargo. It had required direct contact, and Megan could fool it with her illusions. Prof shouldn't be able to sniff us out.
"There," Larsner said. "See, I'm cooperating. Will someone finally get me something to drink?"
"Can't you just make one?" Abraham asked.
"No!"
Larsner snapped, and didn't offer any further explanation, though I knew anyway. He could create only a limited mass of items, and they faded when he wasn't concentrating on them. Food or drinks he created wouldn't sate, as they'd eventually vanish.
"Very well," I said. "You can stay. But as we said, no hurting us. That includes taking powers from anyone here."
"I already promised that, idiot."
I nodded to Cody, then gestured at Larsner. Cody tapped the front of his cap in agreement.
"Now, what would y'all like to drink?" he said to Larsner. "We have lukewarm water and warm water. Both taste like salt. But on the bright side, I've tested both on old Abraham there, and I'm reasonably confident they won't give you the runs."
He would fetch Larsner some water, keep him company, and see what he could find out about the man. I grabbed the other three, walking below, while Cody distracted the epic. As we reached the bottom floor, Megan took me by the arm.
"I don't like this," she hissed.
"I'm inclined to agree," Abraham said. "High epics are erratic and untrustworthy, present company excluded."
"There's something odd about him," I said, shaking my head, looking back up the stairwell and listening to Cody's voice drift down as he started telling Larsner a story about his grandmother over in Scotland. She'd swum to Denmark, apparently.
"I've felt that darkness, David," Megan said. "Keeping him in here is like snuggling up to a bomb. Content that it's not going to explode simply because you can still hear it ticking."
"Nice simile," I said absently.
"Thanks."
"But inaccurate," I said. "He doesn't follow the pattern, Megan. He's scared, and less defiant than simply arrogant. I don't think he's dangerous. To us right now, at least."
"Are you willing to bet our lives on that feeling, David?" Mizzy asked.
"I've already bet your lives by bringing you here." It was discomforting to say, but it was true. "I've said it before. The only way we're going to win this war against the epics is by using other epics. Are we going to turn away one of the most powerful when he seems willing to work with us?" The others fell silent. In the quiet, my mobile buzzed. I glanced at it, half expecting it to be Cody with some addendum to his story that he wanted me to hear. Instead, it was Nighthawk. "Your crate is on the move," he wrote. "What? Already?" I typed back. "Yeah, out of the warehouse, on its way someplace else. What's going on here? Who ordered that box?" "I need to chase this lead," I said, looking up to the others. "Megan, stay here. If something does go wrong with Larsner, you'll have the best chance of getting the others out.
Be careful not to touch him, just in case. He can't take your powers without touching you and holding on a good 30 seconds, or so my reports say. Let's be careful and not let him have any direct contact with you. Fine, she said, but it won't come to anything like that. If I see a hint that he's going dark, I'm grabbing the others and we're bolting. Deal, I said. Abraham, I could use some support on this mission. We'll have to go without Megan's disguises, so it could be dangerous.
More dangerous than staying here?
He asked, looking upward. I don't know, honestly. Depends on how bad a mood our target is in. 20. After we slipped from the hideout, I showed Abraham my mobile, which displayed a map of the city. A red dot from Nighthawk showed the location of our target.
With it moving like that, it could take hours to chase down, Abraham said with a grunt.
We'd better get going then, I said, tucking my mobile into my pocket.
David, in all kindness and peace, Abraham said, your plans have already made me exhaust myself today, and now you want to walk across the city again. Sapadalo. One wonders if you have determined I am getting fat. Wait here.
He shoved his large bag into my hands. It held his gun, and was way heavier than I'd expected. As I stumbled, he strode across the street toward a vendor who had set up under a small awning. You going to tell me what this is about? Nighthawk texted me as I waited. You're a smart man, I wrote back. Guess. I'm a lazy man, and I hate guessing. Despite that, a moment later, he sent me something. Is this about the caverns, somehow? Like, you think maybe Larsener is hiding in them, and you're trying to track him? That was a clever guess. Caverns? I wrote. What caverns? You know, St. Joseph? The religious figure? The city, idiot, Nighthawk sent. The one that used to be in this area. You really don't know? Know what? Wow, and here I was beginning to think you were some kind of omniscient super nerd when it came to epics. I actually know something about them you don't? I could sense the self-satisfaction oozing from the screen. There's an epic from St. Joseph, I wrote, that you think I should know about? Jacob Pham. Drawing a blank. Give me a moment. I'm reveling. I looked up toward Abraham, eager to be on with things, but the Canadian man wasn't finished with his haggling yet. You called him Dig Zone. I started, feeling a shock of recognition. The one who created the diggers, I wrote. Back in New Cago. Yup, Nighthawk sent. Before he was driving people mad for Steelheart, he came from a sleepy town out there. Half that side of the state is pocketed with the crazy tunnels and caverns he made. But if you didn't know that, then your little plot with the mobile today couldn't be about finding Larsener in them. Dig Zone. He'd been behind the strange labyrinths underneath New Cago. It felt distinctly odd to think about similar tunnels being out here, cut into the ground. No, what I'm doing today isn't about finding Larsener, I wrote to Nighthawk. We don't need to find him. He showed up on our doorstep.
What?
Sorry, Abraham is back with our bikes. Talk to you in a bit. Let him chew on that. I pocketed the mobile again as Abraham returned, wheeling two rusty bicycles. I regarded them, dubious. Those look older than two guys in their 60s. Abraham cocked his head. What? I asked.
I'm still surprised sometimes at the things that leave your mouth, he said, reclaiming his pack. These bicycles are old because that was all I felt I could pay for without raising suspicion. These should get us where we want to go. You can ride the bike, can't you?
Sure I can, I said, getting onto one of the squeaky things. At least I used to be able to. Haven't done it in years, but it's like riding a bike, right?
Technically, yes.
He watched me with skepticism, which was unwarranted. My hesitance hadn't come from inability.
as I proved by riding around on the bike to get used to it. Bikes reminded me of my father. I checked my mobile's map and sent a quick explanation to Nighthawk to keep him from freaking out about Larsner, and we set out, joining a smattering of other cyclists on the street. I hadn't seen these often in New Cago. In the overstreets, the rich had prided themselves on using working automobiles. On the understreets, things had been too twisty and uneven to make bikes practical. In Ildithia, they made perfect sense. Here, the sides of the streets were lined with cars made of salt, but there was open space in the road. Many of the salt cars had been pushed out of the way. They didn't fuse to the roadway like things had in New Cago, leaving an open and wide road. It was easy, even when you had to weave around a traffic jam nobody had cleared out. These things must grow again each week. I enjoyed our ride for a short time, though I couldn't help remembering earlier days. I'd been 7 when my father had taught me to ride. Way too late to be first learning. All my friends could already do it, and had started to make fun of me. Sometimes I wished I could just go back and slap myself around. I'd been so timid, so unwilling to act. After I'd turned 7, Father had decided I was ready. Though I'd whined the whole time, he'd never seemed frustrated. Perhaps teaching me to ride had been a way to distract himself from the eviction notices and an apartment that felt too empty, now that it had only 2 occupants. For a moment, I was there with him, on the street in front of our building. Life hadn't been good then. We'd been in the middle of a crisis, but I'd had him. I remembered his hand on my back as he walked with me, then ran with me, then let go so I could ride on my own for the first time. And I remembered feeling, suddenly, that I could do it. A swelling of emotion had overwhelmed me, one that had almost nothing at all to do with riding a bike. I'd looked back at my father's tired grin, and had started to believe, for the first time in months, that everything was going to be okay. That day, I'd recaptured something. I'd lost so much with Mom's death, but I still had him. I'd known I could do anything, so long as I still had him. Abraham pulled up to a street corner and halted, yielding to a couple of horse-drawn wagons bearing grain from the harvest, men with battle rifles riding alongside. I stopped beside him, my head lowered.
"David," Abraham asked. "David, are you crying?"
"I'm fine," I rasped, checking my mobile. "We turn left here. The crate has stopped moving. We should be able to catch it soon." Abraham didn't press further, and I took off again. I hadn't realized that the pain was still so close to the surface, like a fish who liked to sunbathe. Probably best not to dwell on the memories. Instead, I tried to enjoy the breeze and the thrill of motion. The bike certainly did beat walking. We took another corner at an eager speed, and were forced to slow as a group of bikes ahead of us stopped. We pulled to a stop, too, and my skin prickled, hair standing on end. No people on the sidewalks, nobody carting their possessions toward a new home, as had been prevalent on the other streets. No one leaning out windows they'd broken open. This roadway was quiet, save for the rattling of bike pedals and a voice farther up the street.
"Now, this'll just take a minute,"
a British accent of some flavor I didn't recognize. I grew cold as I caught a glimpse of a man with a shaved head wearing spiked black leather. A little neon sphere hovered to his side, changing colors from red to green. A tag, they sometimes called it. Epics who could manifest their powers visually would sometimes walk around with an obvious display, a glow about them, or a few spinning leaves, something that said, "Yes, I'm one of them, so don't mess with me."
"David," Abraham said softly.
"Neon," I whispered. "Minor epic. Light manipulation powers. No invisibility, but he can put on quite a show. And drill you dead with a laser." Weakness. Did my notes have a weakness for him? He spoke further with the group in front of us while some men in long jackets approached, carrying a device that looked like a plate with a screen on one side. One of the dowsers that Larsener had mentioned. It was indeed identical to the one I had seen the team use in New Cargo. Neon's team scanned each person in the group ahead of us, then waved them on. Prof's hunting Larsener, I thought. He wouldn't use one of those to try to find us. He knows Megan can beat them. Neon's team motioned us forward.
Loud noises, I whispered, remembering. If this goes south, start screaming. It will negate his powers.
Abraham nodded, looking far more confident as the two of us wheeled our bikes forward. There was a chance this team had our descriptions, depending on how worried Prof was about the Reckoners. I was relieved when Neon yawned and had his team scan Abraham with no look of recognition in his eyes. The dowser approved Abraham, and the team waved him forward. Then they wrapped the scanner's strap around my arm. And we stood quietly on the street. It took forever, long enough that Neon stepped over, looking annoyed. I started to sweat, preparing to yell. Would he decide to burn me away out of frustration for slowing him down? He wasn't that important in Epic. The minor ones had to be more careful about wanton murder. If they ruined the working population of a city, the high epics wouldn't have anyone to serve them. Finally, lethargically, the machine gave a response.
Huh, Neon said. Haven't had it take that long before. Let's search the nearby buildings. Maybe someone's in them, making our machine flip.
He unhooked the device and waved me away.
Get out of here!
I moved, noticing as I passed that the dowser had given me a negative reading, as it should. That was no epic. No matter what Regalia claimed. I spent the rest of the ride feeling sick, remembering those moments confronting my reflection in the water, listening to her awful promise. You were angry at Prof for hiding things from the team, a voice inside me whispered. Aren't you doing exactly the same? That was stupid. There was nothing to hide. We reached the location where the crate had stopped moving, a street lined with 3- and 4-story apartment buildings. After 2 days in the city, I was well aware that the powerful clans looked for locations like this, while what had once been rich suburban homes were now widely ignored. In a world of epics and rival gangs, living space was far less valuable than security. The two of us stopped at the mouth of the street. A group of young men no older than me lounged here, holding an assortment of old weapons, including one teenager with a crossbow of all things. A large flag flying the emblem of a stingray fluttered above one of the buildings.
"We're not recruiting,"
one of the youths said to me.
"Beat it."
"You have a visitor among you," I said to them, hoping my guess was correct. "An outsider. Give this person our descriptions." The youths shared a few looks, then one ran off to do as I ordered. Within moments, I knew I'd guessed something right, because a good number of older men and women with really nice guns came stalking down the street toward us.
David? Abraham asked. "Do you want to say something more, perhaps? That we..."
He trailed off as he spotted the one person among the group wearing a hoodie, rifle slung over her arm. The hood made her face difficult to see, but several locks of red hair poked out next to her chin. Tia. 21. Abraham didn't say anything as the two of us were quickly surrounded by armed people and hustled off the street toward one of the apartment buildings. He simply gave Tia a friendly salute, one finger tapping the middle of his brow. He'd obviously figured out what we were doing long ago. Tia's people shuffled us into a room with no windows, lit only by a row of candles that were slowly melting onto the countertop of an old kitchen bar. Why bother with candlesticks when your home would be dissolving anyway? Though the room did have an actual wooden door on it, which was rare in this city, it would have to be carted each week to the next location and reattached. One of the armed Ildithians relieved us of our weapons, while another shoved us down into chairs. Tia stood at the back of the group, arms folded, her face shrouded by that hood. She was slender and short, and her lips, which I could see within the hood's shadows, were drawn into a line of disapproval. She was the Reckoner's second-in-command, and one of the smartest people I'd ever met. "David," she said calmly, "in Babalar you and I met together in our hideout, after you'd gone out to deliver supplies. Tell me what we discussed."
"What does that matter? Tia, we need to talk about..."
"Answer the question, David," Abraham said. "She is testing to see if we are ourselves."
I swallowed. Of course. Any number of epics could have created doppelgangers of the Reckoners at Prof's command. I tried to recall the event she was talking about. Ugh, why hadn't she picked something more memorable, like when I'd first joined the Reckoners? She needs something Prof wouldn't know about, I realized. I started to sweat. I'd been out on the submarine, and... sparks. It was hard to think with those armed men and women staring at me, each as angry as a cab driver who'd discovered I'd ralphed all over his back seat. "I met with Prof that day," I said. "I came to the base to report, and we talked about some of the other epics in Babalar."
"And what interesting metaphor did you make?"
"Sparks, you expect me to remember those?"
"I've heard a few that were rather hard to forget," Abraham noted, "despite a great deal of time trying."
"Not helping," I muttered. "Oh, I talked about using toothpaste for hair gel. Ketchup for hair gel. But as I think about it, toothpaste would have been a way better metaphor. It hardens stronger, I think. And..."
"It's him," Tia said. "Put your guns down."
"How did you know she was with us, kid?"
said one of the Yildethians, a stocky older woman with thinning hair. "Your shipments," I said.
"We get shipments twice a week," the woman said, "as do most of the sizable families in the city. How would that have led you here?"
"Well," I said. Tia groaned, putting her hand to her face.
"My cola."
I nodded. I'd spotted it in the crate that day, when I'd first seen Prof. Not just any cola, the brand she loved. It was expensive, unique, and worth playing a hunch on.
"I told you,"
said another Ildithian, a bulky man with a face like a barbecue grill, in that it was ugly.
"I told you that accepting this woman among us would be trouble. You said we wouldn't be in danger."
"I never said that," replied the woman with thinning hair. "I said that helping her was something we needed to do."
"This is worse than you think, Carla," Tia said. "David is smarter than he might first seem, but it's hardly outside of reason that something he discovered might be discovered by someone else."
I said. They all looked at me.
"Now that you mention it," I said, "Prof might know about the cola. At least, he spotted some of it in the boxes the other day."
The people in the room froze, then started shouting to one another, sending messengers, warning their lookouts. Tia pulled off her hood, exposing her short red hair, and rubbed her forehead.
"I'm a fool,"
she said, barely audible over the shouted orders from Carla.
"They put in their supply order and asked if I needed anything. I barely gave it any thought. A few cans of cola would be nice."
Nearby, the ugly Ildithian man entered with the crate that had held the cola and dug through it, discovering the broken mobile.
"A Nighthawk mobile," he said. "I thought these were untraceable."
"It's only a shell," I said quickly. "Convenient to put the bug in, since it had a power supply and antenna."
I wasn't giving everything up. The man accepted that and tossed the mobile to Carla. She removed the battery, then moved to the side of the room with several other people, where they held a quiet conference. When I stood up, Ugly Face glared at me, hand on his pistol. So I sat back down. "Tia?" I asked. It was odd to see her like this, with a rifle slung over her shoulder.
She had always run operations for us from positions of relative safety. I didn't think I'd ever seen her fire a weapon.
Why didn't you contact us?
Contact you how, David? She asked, sounding tired. She stepped closer to me and Abraham. Jonathan had access to our mobile network and knew every one of our hideouts. I didn't even know if you'd survived.
We tried contacting you in Babalar, I said.
I was in hiding. She
sighed, sitting down on the table next to us.
He was hunting me, David. He came directly to where I'd been set up during the Regalia hit, pulled the sub out of the water and crushed it. I was out by then, thankfully, but I heard him calling for me, pleading, begging me to help him with the darkness.
She closed her eyes.
We both knew that if this day came, I'd be in more danger than anyone else in the Reckoners. What did I say to that? I could imagine how it would feel to have the one you loved begging for your help, all the while knowing it was a trap. I imagined struggling to not give in, to ignore their pleas. I wouldn't have been strong enough. Sparks, I'd chased Megan halfway across the country, despite her threatening to kill me. I'm sorry, Tia, I whispered. She shook her head. I'm prepared for this. John and I talked about it, like I said. I can do him one last favor.
She opened her eyes.
I see you had the same instinct.
Not exactly,
Abraham said, sharing a look with me.
Tia, I said. We've cracked it.
It?
The secret, I said, growing eager. The weaknesses, the darkness, they're tied together. Epics all have nightmares about their weaknesses.
Of course they do, Tia said.
The weaknesses are the only thing that can make them feel powerless.
It's more than that, Tia, I said. Way more. The weaknesses are often tied to something the person feared before getting their powers. A phobia, a terror. It seems, well, I haven't talked to enough of them, but it seems like becoming an epic makes the fear worse. Either way, stopping, or at least managing, the darkness is possible.
What do you mean?
Fears, I said quietly, only to her. If the epic confronts their fear, it drives back the darkness.
Why?
Does it matter?
You're the one who kept saying that this should all make sense. If there really is a logic behind the weaknesses, then shouldn't there be a logical reason for the darkness?
Yeah.
Yeah, there should be. I sat back.
Megan says...
Megan? You brought her? She's one of them, David. She's why we know this works. Tia, we can save him.
Don't give me that hope.
But don't give me that hope. She glared at me.
Don't you dare do that, David Charleston. You don't think this is hard enough? Planning to kill him? Wondering if there isn't something more I should do? He made me promise. I'm going to keep that promise, damn you!
Tia, Abraham said softly.
She looked at him as I sat there, stunned by her tone.
David is right, Tia, Abraham said in his calm way. We must try to bring him back. If we cannot save Jonathan Phaedrus, then we might as well give up this fight. We cannot kill them all.
Tia shook her head.
You believe he's found the secret? After all this time?
I believe he has a good theory, Abraham said. And Megan has learned to control the darkness. If we do not test David's theories, we are fools. He is right. We cannot kill them all. We've been trying the same thing for too long. It is time to do something different.
I suddenly felt very, very smart for having brought Abraham along.
Tia listened to him. Heck, a rabid chihuahua having a seizure would stop and listen when Abraham spoke. The door burst open, and a frantic young woman scrambled into the room.
"Sir,"
she said to Carla.
"Crooknecks. The whole family. 300 strong and then some. All armed and coming this way. He's with them."
"He?" the woman, Carla, asked.
"The new epic. Sir, we're surrounded."
The room fell silent. The ugly man who had disagreed with Carla earlier turned to her. He didn't speak, but the implication was there in his dark expression. "You've doomed us." Abraham stood up, drawing all eyes.
"I will need my gun."
"Like hell," Carla said. "You caused this."
"No, I did," Tia said, rising. "We're just fortunate that David got here first."
Carla growled, but then barked for her people to prepare for battle. For all the good it would do, Prof could destroy this neighborhood on his own. Someone tossed Abraham's pack to him as others rushed out the door. Carla moved to follow them, perhaps to get a look at the foe herself.
"Carla," Tia said, "you can't fight them."
"I doubt they'll give us a choice."
"They might if you give them what they want."
Carla looked at her companions, who nodded. They'd been thinking the same thing.
"No,"
I said, standing up.
"You can't turn her over."
"You have 5 minutes to prepare, Tia," Carla said. "I'll send runners to talk to the oncoming force. See if I can get them to demand you. We can act like we didn't know who you were."
She left us in the windowless box of a room, posting two conspicuous guards at the door.
"I can't believe,"
I began. Tia cut me off.
"Don't be a child, David. The Stingray clan was good enough to take me in, listen to my plans. We can't ask them to die protecting me." "But..."
I looked at her, pained.
"Tia, he'll kill you. Eventually," she said. "I might have some time." "He murdered Val and XL immediately." "Yes. But he'll want to interrogate first." "You do know it, don't you?"
I said softly.
"His weakness."
She nodded.
"He'd rip apart this entire city to get at me. We'll be lucky if he doesn't murder everyone in this district, to be certain the secret hasn't gotten out."
It made me sick. Steelheart had done something similar on that day, so long ago when my father and I had seen him bleed. Tia pressed something into my hand, a data chip.
"My plans," she said, "for bringing John down. I've had variations on this in mind for years, just in case, but I've tailored it specifically to this city and what he's doing here. David, there's something bigger going on with him. I've been able to get people in to scout near him. I think Regalia must have given him something, some kind of intel on Calamity. I think she sent him here."
"Tia," I said, looking to Abraham for support, "I suspect some of the same things, but you can't go with Prof. We need you."
"Then stop him," she said, "before he kills me."
"But..." She crossed the room, quickly, and grabbed the broken mobile from a table.
"You can track this if I stick the battery back in?"
"Yeah," I said.
"Good. Use it to see where he takes me. I didn't tell any of the Ildithians his weakness, and I can hide behind that truth for a time. They might be safe. And if he asks about you all, I can say I got separated from you in Babalar. He'd spot a lie from me, but I won't be lying."
"He will break you eventually, Tia," Abraham said. "He is nothing if not persistent."
She nodded.
"Yes, but he'll act kindly at first. I'm certain of it. He'll try to bring me to his side. Only after I refuse will he get brutal."
She grimaced.
"Trust me. I have no intention of being some kind of noble martyr. I'm counting on you. Stop him and get me out."
Abraham saluted again, more solemn this time.
Sparks! He was going to let it happen.
People were calling outside the room. Carla ducked back in.
They've said we have 5 minutes to turn over the outsider. I think they believe that we didn't know who you were. They also don't seem to know about the other two.
John's paranoia works for us, Tia said. If he'd been hiding here, he'd never have told you who he really was. He'll believe that I was trying to blend in. She looked toward me. Are you going to make this difficult?
No, I said, resigned.
But we will get you out.
Good.
She hesitated.
I'll see if I can dig up what he's working on here, what his plot is for this city.
Tia,
Carla said from the doorway.
I'm sorry.
Tia nodded, turning to leave. Wait, I said, then continued in a whisper.
The weakness, Tia. What is it?
You know it. I frowned. I don't know if your theory is correct, she said. But, yes, he has nightmares about something. Think, David. In all our time together, what is the one thing you've truly seen him fear? I blinked and realized she was right. I did know. It was obvious. His powers, I whispered. She nodded, grim.
But how does that work? I demanded. He can obviously use his own powers. They don't negate themselves.
Unless someone else is using them.
Someone else. Prof was a gifter.
When we were younger, Tia whispered urgently, we experimented with John's powers. He can create lances of light, force field spears. He gifted the ability to me, and I, by accident, launched one of those lances at John. David, the wound he took that day didn't regenerate. His powers couldn't fix it. He took months to recover, healing like a normal person. We never told anyone, not even Dean.
So someone gifted with one of his powers
can negate the rest, yes.
She glanced at Carla, who was waving urgently, then leaned into me, continuing to speak very quietly.
He fears them, David. The powers granted him, the weight they bring. And so he lives his life with a great dichotomy. He takes every opportunity he can to gift his powers away, to let the team use them so he doesn't have to. But each time he does, he gives them a weapon that could be used against him.
She gripped my arm.
Get me out, she said,
then turned and rushed to Carla, who led her from the room. They let us watch, from a distance using scopes atop one of the apartment buildings, where they'd hollowed out a nice little hidden sniper nest. We were attended by a couple of guards who, we'd been promised, would let us go, assuming that Prof took Tia and left without demanding more. Again, I had to watch a man I loved and respected act like someone else, someone proud and imperious, bathed in a faint green glow from the force field disc he stood upon. I felt so powerless as the Eldithians led Tia up to him, then forced her down on her knees. They bowed and retreated from Prof. I waited, sweating. Tia was right. He didn't kill her immediately. He surrounded her in a force field, then turned and stalked away, her orb trailing behind him. He never gifted us that power, I thought. He gifted us force field protection in the form of the jackets, but only in small amounts. The globes, those spears I saw him use the other day. He didn't let us know about those abilities. For fear that someday they might be used to kill him. Sparks. How were we going to get him to give away his abilities? I knew his weakness, but approaching it still seemed impossible. As Tia and Prof left, I closed my eyes, feeling like a coward. Not because I'd failed to save Tia,
but because of how badly I'd been wanting her to come with us. She would have taken over, been in charge. She'd have known what to do. Unfortunately, that burden was now back on me.
22. I was somewhere dark and warm again. I had memories, voices like my own, that spoke in harmony. Together we were one. I'd lost those voices somehow, but I wanted them, needed them. I felt an ache being separated from them. At least I was warm and safe and comfortable. I knew what to expect, though I could not brace myself in the dream. So the crashes of thunder still shocked me. The peals of terrible blaring sound, like 100 raging wolves. Garish, cold, harsh light. Snapping, attacking, assaulting, smothering. It came at me and sought to destroy me. I shot bolt upright, suddenly awake. I was back on the floor of the upper room of our hideout. Megan, Cody, and Mizzy slept nearby. Abraham was on watch tonight. With an unknown epic in the hideout, none of us were comfortable sleeping on our own or in pairs, and we were certain always to post a guard. Sparks. That nightmare. That terrible nightmare. My pulse was still racing and my skin was clammy. My blanket was soaked in sweat. I could probably have wrung out an entire bucketful. I'm going to have to tell the others, I thought as I sat there in the dark.